Okay, first off, any questions? I sent a Rodham on the homework around this morning that I had two typos. So hopefully you received that. If you didn't, let me know. So we're going to do this quiz, same drill as before. Go through in rapid fire succession, asking some questions, but then I just want to discuss them. And that the reasons why I put them on here is motivated by answers that I saw frequently on the midterm that I just wanted to talk a little bit more about. So hopefully you have an answer sheet in your possession.
I don't think everyone has one yet.
Anybody have ones left over? Okay, so first few questions, we're all going to be considering the correlation between the digit symbol substitution test and age, and going to be considering that we have two different studies. In study one, the least square slope was negative 2. In study two, the least square slope was negative 1. If all other aspects of the studies were similar, which of the following statements is most likely to be true? Pardon? If you think that more than one answer, so I've been given away that I choose more than one sometimes, if you want to do so, that's okay too. Certainly some of the questions do have more than one answer, but I will make that clear. That is my point. Now, the two studies are similar in all respects, except for age is sampled over the range of 70 to 80 in study one, or it's over the range of 60 to 90. And now the choices are whether study one has a more extreme sample correlation, study two has a more extreme sample correlation, or whether they tend to be equal. Question three. Everything is the same between the two studies except for the fact that study one is restricted to college graduates, where in study two, the study takes on all education levels. And again, answering whether study one has the more extreme sample correlation, study two does, or whether they tend to be equal. And in question four, all aspects of the study are the same except for the sample size. Study one, the study sample size is 1,000. In study two, the study sample size is 5,000. And if all other aspects stay constant, which study tends to have the higher sample correlation? One, two, or they'll tend to be equal. So question five, when presenting a single number to describe any association between DSST and age, the most useful descriptive statistic to present is the mean, median, geometric mean, standard deviation, minimum, maximum, or minimum or maximum, if you will. None of the above. Question six, we're considering associations between DSST and age, but we're interested in whether education level modifies any such association. So among college graduates, the sample correlation is negative 0.3. non-college graduates, the sample correlation is negative 0.8. Which of the following statements best describes your conclusion about possibility of effect modification? Education does modify the association. It does not modify the association, or there's insufficient information. Question 7. We have a plot of y versus x, and we have a stratification variable w. So on the left-hand side, I plot all the data together. The exact same data is plotted on the right-hand side, but now within strata defined by values of w. The colors denote the values. Is w an effect modifier, a confounder, precision variable? Question 8, same setting, y versus x, stratification variable w, again, colors define different levels of w on the right-hand side. Effect modifier, confounder, or precision variable. Question 9. Yeah, w as a stratification variable displayed in colors on the right. Is it an effect modifier, a confounder, or a precision variable? And 10. Now we have plot of Kaplan-Meier curves. Relative to treatment effect, the stage of disease appears to be an effect modifier, a confounder, or a precision variable. And I was told that the green line is the less advanced disease, so where advanced disease is 0, and the treatment is 1. The blue line is the less advanced disease, and the treatment group is 0, so placebo. The orange line is the treatment group in the more advanced disease, and the red line, I think I've got those words right. The red line is the more advanced disease in the placebo group. An effect modifier, a confounder, or a precision variable. And question 11, last one, summary statistics for selected laboratory values. Give you the mean, standard deviation, minimum, median, and maximum. Which variables might have substantial outliers? You can answer as many of them as you want. It is incorrect to list D and any of the other ones. So I'll give you that much of a hint. And if you could just pass your papers to the middle. Okay. So question one, where, in fact, I think it was Sean, you asked the question about on question one. Somebody over there asked the question on question one. Yeah, how do we define higher? And this is a difficult problem, by the way, so just always watch your wording when you talk about correlation. Because some people imprecisely use the word correlation, and we know it's imprecise because, in fact, it was decreed long ago that statisticians get to define each and every word that you ever use in your life, and if you use it in an imprecise, then you're wrong. Now, people talk about correlations and associations in the same sort of breath, and in this class, we need to be far more careful than that. And it is true that a stronger association will tend to be a more extreme correlation. But just watch the words. So the point here is study two has a higher sample correlation because study one's is more extremely negative. You just have to watch it. All the other questions, I use the word more extreme. But the idea is the slope, the sign of the correlation follows the sign of the slope. Of course, the slope is what I regard as a scientific measure. These next questions were all the things that I think aren't very scientific. They're just comments about what you would be doing in your study, just how you happen to design it to try to answer a scientific question. We'd all design a study slightly differently. One person might decide to sample 60 to 90-year-olds, where another one decided only to do 70 to 80-year-olds. Does that change the importance of our question? Probably not. Probably not. But our overall question is as you get older, you know, do you lose cognitive function? And we all know the answer to that question is no. So, okay. So, study two has the more extreme sample correlation if everything else stays the same, purely because we sampled over a greater age range. It's not that there's not a stronger association. Sean? So this is the hard part. So this is, you know, thinking along the x-axis, that sampling along that range, keeping everything else, the spread about the line the same, it's easier to tell there's an association. So, you know, if you're trying to draw the slope of some line, put the two points as far away as you can from each other. And that's this concept. We can tell that there's a slope. But this is the common theme here is correlation is more a statement of how well you can tell that there is a non-zero slope than it is about what that slope is. So when we sample age over a broader range, then we will have more correlation. It's also true if we sampled DSST over a broader range while keeping everything else constant, it would also be getting. I think, and this is the confusing part, but when I talk about the within-group variance, the variance of DSST holding age constant, that's the thing that will lead to a lower correlation.
So sample correlation here is just
is R. Okay. Yeah, R we generally use. Yeah, we're all. Okay. In question three, which will have the more extreme sample correlation. Okay, so I'm pretending here, but I think I'm pretty safe on this. It certainly shows up in the Alzheimer's type thing. Is when you're looking for cognitive function decline, people who have more reserve, it doesn't tend to show up as fast. It's not really that the disease affects them differently. It's probably more a function of the tests that we use. But the idea of giving people stupid tests, well, what are those called? Those are called SATs and GREs. So I am imagining that education level for a given age would tend to have the higher the education level. It's not that the education taught you to take those tests. It's just going to be a bigger for better.
How do we know if it was more than a year?
Well, I said that I was keeping everything else constant, so the age distribution is constant, things like that. You don't. I mean, you're right there.
Okay.
There's lots of things that I could mess up, but everything else being constant. Yes, if you wanted to say that there was confounding or something like that, it's there. But everything else being constant, the only thing that I'm doing is I'm adding another stratum at the top, right? So just the way to think of this is, I mean, there's lots of things. I didn't also tell you that this definitely causes an effect. If it doesn't cause an effect, you could say that they tend to be about the same. If there's not an effect due to college education, they'd be about the same. But the key point is, and again, in Alzheimer's research, this would show this. If I've sampled the same ages, but sometimes take the same level of educational level, everybody's one, or I allow some variability, then that we would have more variability in DSST scores for the same age if we don't restrict that other predictor of DSST. So you just think out what that spread is. And of course, for question four, sample size has absolutely nothing to do with tendencies of the sample correlation. It does have something to do with the variability of the sample correlation, not the tendency. Yeah.
Won't there tend to be a greater range if you have greater sample size?
A greater range. If I've kept everything else the same, there doesn't have to be. I could have designed the exact same age distribution. So there is so much carried in that if all other aspects stay constant. But you're right. I mean, actually, if this was just an observational study, then likely, as we went to a larger sample size, we would have sampled larger ages. But again, just the fact that the range changes does not mean the variance changes. And it's the variance that matters to us. Okay? So variance need not increase. So we can go back to the other one where I said I sampled a greater age range. If I had kept the variance, and I can do that. I mean, if I went back to this slide, it's possible that in study one, I sampled over the range from 70 to 80, and I had greater variance than I did over the 60 to 90. That's possible. And again, this is a message that I keep trying to get, because in modern statistics, which term I absolutely hate, okay, you know, if somebody comes and says, we're doing modern statistics, count on the fact that they're ignoring statistical theory. This has just been my observation. But they tend to downplay the variance too much. Oh, let's look at the interquartile range, and let's look at the median. And the fact is, these are things that the variance matters. So spread will increase with sample size, but as long as we're estimating the variance, we're still estimating the same quantity.
So yes. In this case, the sample correlations will tend to be equal if they both have the same variance.
Yes, if they did, it would be, they'd tend to be equal. Yeah, but yeah. I'm glad that you aren't really graded on these things. It's just the concept that you do this. But in this one, if all I've changed is the sample size, but I keep my whole sampling scheme the same, everything is estimating the same thing except for the minimum and maximum. The minimum and maximum estimate different things depending upon your sample size. Okay.
I remember in one lecture you were talking about when you have a larger sample size, you have more chance of getting kind of more extreme values.
Yeah, the minimum and maximum. Okay. But in a scientific quantity, the minimum and maximum estimate quantiles of the distribution, but the minimum tends to estimate the 1 over n plus 1 quantile. So that would mean the minimum in study 1 was estimating the 0.1 percentile, and in study 2, it's estimating the 0.02 percentile. I mean, two different, they're estimating different things. So the spread of the distribution will be look bad. But the variance is always, the sample variance is always estimating the population variance, no matter what your sample size is. It gets more precise with a larger sample size, but it's always estimating the same quantity. And correlation depends upon those variances. Correlation is a
is a ratio of variances, ultimately. Variances and covariances. Okay, question five. Yeah, none of the above. Only because an association, if I said a single number, and I do urge you, as I was grading the exams, and I was perfectly accepting of you telling me when I asked for an association, you gave me the means in both groups. But then somewhere along grading, and I was saying, hey, you know, I really wish I'd, you know, pushed you more. Now, when you say the word association, I'm going to want you to come up with one confidence interval. And I'm going to tell you that some of you have been so indoctrinated by other fields that it's going to be hard to get you up to concentrate on, yes, when I talk about the difference of two means, it is relevant to know what the two means actually were. But ultimately, the inference we want one confidence interval. We want one p-value. So, you know, ideally, every question in my perfect world, every question can be answered by one number, not having to say, because I don't know how to order two numbers. You know, we have, you can talk about age and you can talk about beauty, you know, and it's easy to see, you know, who's younger, and it might be easy to see who is better looking. But, you know, then you come to me and Brad Pitt and you can't really decide who's better by age or by how they look. And so, you know, it's that difficulty. He is younger. So the key point is, the only purpose of this was, when you think of an association, ultimately do come up with a single number. It is very, very useful to present the two numbers that led to that too, though.
So what's a single number? What is
the difference in means, the different ratio of medians. It's that concept that's the measure. But admittedly, ratios are unitless. And it matters, you know, this is the problem with the odds ratio that we use so often. But when I say I have increased the odds tenfold, 100-fold, 1,000-fold, 1,000,000-fold of me winning the lottery, just because I'm going to buy the ticket this week and waiting until I find it. Okay? But that huge odds ratio, the end result is the same. I'm still not. So that as you look at that ratio, it's always very useful, truly, in writing the whole paragraph to say something like, there's a 1 in 5 million chance of winning the lottery this week if you buy a ticket, and there's roughly a 1 in 10 to the 100th chance of finding the winning ticket, and that ratio is whatever. But ultimately do come down to the single number that's measuring your association, and that single number will inevitably be either a difference or a ratio. So again, the most common parameter used as basis for statistical inference is the mean, where proportions are the mean of a binary variable, and the log geometric mean is the mean of log transform data. I do urge you to, you know, do the geometric mean, but realize that what we're doing at all times is we are working on all the good properties of a mean. It reflects a wide variety of differences between the distributions, and statistical theory helps us a whole lot in providing inference. But when it comes to measures of associations, most commonly we contrast some summary measure across the groups. Most commonly it's the difference of means, but we do know how to do ratios of means. In two sample case, it tends to be the difference of medians. But in censored survival data, the parametric models that we use there tend to most often be on a multiplicative scale, and we'll look at ratios of medians there. There's no law against taking the difference of geometric means. I've never seen it done. We use ratios there. Proportions, most often we take the difference, but we do talk about a relative risk, which would be a multiplicative model. Odds, again, I've never seen anybody talk about the difference in odds. It could be done, but that would be even less informative than the odds ratio is itself. Difference of rates, so Poisson counts and things like that. In a two-sample problem, that should probably do most often, but the second we get into a regression situation, we go multiplicatively, so relative rates. And the hazard ratio is what we use most often. So it's always a difference or a ratio. There are habits that we get into about which we use which time.
And so a measure of association, we would at some point report that single number. Question six. So here is really what the issue was that led to all of these first few questions. I had the question at one point about, you know, I asked a whole bunch of questions about correlation, and then the part D said, you know, is there effect modulation? And you lost points entirely if all you told me about was the correlation, right? And why? Well, as we just saw in those previous questions, the correlations can be quite different without any underlying association in the data. Difference in the association in the data, right? All of those things where I just changed what the age distribution was and had a wider variability, or I sampled more groups than one or the other, those led to different correlations, but not different slopes. So on the test, you didn't get any points, or you weren't supposed to get any points if all you told me about was correlation. If you did get points, it meant that I graded it wrong. Now, some of you first wrote something about the slopes, and I was fine with that, and then went on into the correlations, and that just fell under the category of if you write too much, you can sometimes lose points. So if you have any questions about, you know, you said this was the answer, and I had it right there, yes, look at the rest of your answer. But this is a very important point to me. Just seeing that the correlations are different does not mean effect modification. It could just be talking about within the strata that you had perhaps some measure of confounding that led to, I don't know, the height. The log FEV, log height relationship is more correlated among non-smokers than it is among the smokers. But I don't think there's effect modification in that. I think that we just have non-smokers that go from age 3 to 19, whereas our smokers go from age 9 to 19. So I expect to see different correlations in those two groups, and it's not effect modification. So we have to think very, very carefully. And if nothing else, you learn that to be careful when you use the word correlation around me. We've made some progress. And again, I'll grant you that when people speak imprecisely, not in a statistics class, when they'll sometimes use the word correlation, just to mean association. But you have to be more careful than that in here. And if they start doing that, it's really good to ask them what they mean. You know, to say, what do you mean when you're saying it's correlated? Are you really meaning there's a linear trend, or are you just meaning that there's some association? Because the correlation is also a linear trend in the means, right? Correlation is very much about the means. There could be nothing going on with the medians, or alternatively, there could be something going on with the medians and not with the means. You've got to understand. Okay, question seven. This is just a, you know, again, hit this difference, the graphical appearance of these. Now, I claimed this was a confounder. I didn't give you a choice to say it was none of them. You could have said, well, it depends. You know, what are you talking about, and what's your measure of association? Clearly here, if I'm believing that you can answer this question, I'm talking about means as my measure of association, because what I'm putting on there are the low S curves. And in this case is one where we get qualitative confounding because there's a slight downward slope in the combined group, but actually within each stratum, it's a slight upward trend.
What kind of data?
What kind of data?
This is just random?
Oh, yeah, this is random. Nice when you make up your own data. But you know, this is not bad for the sorts of things we're seeing in the smoking data set, right? Where we see the trend the opposite direction. And this happens sometimes, yes.
Well, I may have missed something here, but I remember a slide where you talked about how you can't tell the difference between a confounder and a precision variable unless you know whether it's associated with your predictor or not. And I'm not sure how you can tell from this data whether it is associated with the predictor.
Well, all the blue ones are to the left of the X distribution, and all the whatever color that is on the right, it's probably red, is on the right-hand side. So this is an extreme case that I can't tell there's that association.
But you're right. Often there would be some data where you couldn't pick out whether there was that association. But in this case, I made the range of the data That's right. So we can look and we can see that, you know, if X is high, you must be in the red stratum. And if X is low, you must be in the blue stratum. So we can see that. So this is an extreme case. But this is how, I mean, you know, anytime you really see, and some people do try to say that it's only confounding if it changes direction, and that's not true. We care about the numbers. So sometimes you'll just get a steeper slope after you adjust for confounding or a less steep slope. In this case, the unadjusted estimate had a downward slope. All the other ones had an upward slope. I call this qualitative confounding in addition to just the quantitative type aspect. So a pure confounder, if you have something that's just a pure confounder, the estimate of the treatment effect is the same across all the strata. So I had the same slope in every single one of those strata. And the confounder is causally associated with the response. There was no way you could pick that out from the graph. And the confounder is associated with the predictor of interest in the sample. That we could pick out. Now, when you're analyzing difference of means of continuous data, and that is what we were in that picture because it was a scatter plot, and we were putting low S curves on there, so I was using means. The stratified smooth curves of the data are parallel. The distribution of the predictor of interest differs across strata, but it need not always be the range. I mean, a difference in the variance across those groups would cause that problem for us too, but you might not be able to see that from a graph. And here's the thing that a lot of people try to use this as definition of confounding, but this is only true when we're looking at means. So some of you, when I asked the question on the exam about confounding, told me that you got similar or different. By the way, your answers, I didn't care what you said, whether there was or was not associations at any given time. I just cared that they all went together. And so you told me, perhaps, that the unadjusted estimate and the adjusted estimates are the same. But if you did not say, and because these are means, I can use this, then you did not get, and I'm trying to remember whether I ever gave credit for that. It depended upon how much I saw you use the word mean somewhere in there. So, but when you're looking at means, this does work. But odds, it does not work. Hazards, it does not work. So as we get into those sorts of regressions, We'll step away from ever just comparing the adjusted and the unadjusted estimates. And I put the word pure confounder in here because if I don't care about effect modification, I generally do still care about confounding. So it could be that if you got down into something that looked like it was an effect modifier, but then you just said, but I'm not going to answer the two questions, I'm just going to answer one, I would still be concerned about confounding in that case. Some people teach that, one, no, it's an effect modifier, confounding doesn't matter anymore, but that's not true in who we select for President of the United States, and so therefore I don't think it's true in anything else either. And that is this idea of, we know that my precinct votes very, very differently from Bellevue, very, very differently from Bellevue. But the key point is, at the end of the day, we don't just say, oh, well, you know, Seattle votes one way and Bellevue votes the other. We put them all together and decide who wins. And when we do that, we're ignoring the effect modification. But in polling, you need to adjust for the confounding. They may have sampled too many people from my neighborhood to get the good view. Well, okay, so the good view of who's going to win, not the good view of who's right. So when we're interpreting scatter plots, W associated with Y, independent of association between Y and X, the vertical separation between low S curves for strata, that's where you're looking to see that there's an association, but there's no way you can get the causal association from the data. And then W associated with X, that's the question of what preponderance of X values among the strata. And again, you may not always be able to see that in a graph. And that's why tables are often way more reliable than graphs. I can make you believe anything with a graph. But the detail with which you look through tables, of course, always means that
I can't fool you there. Question 8 is a precision variable. There does not appear to be different distribution of x across the different strata. There does appear to be an effect of w on my outcome variable y because the strata are vertically separated. Looks to be a precision variable. Again, a pure precision variable. Estimates of the treatment effects are the same across strata. The variable is causally associated with the response, and it's not associated with the predictor of interest in the sample. Stratified smooth curves of the data are parallel on scatter plots when you're looking at mean as your measure of association. Distribution of predictive interest across the strata. And the unadjusted and adjusted analyses give similar estimates. Where the precision will come in means, the precision will come in, you'll have a smaller standard error. You'll have a tighter confidence interval. But the estimates will be the same when you're looking at means. When we're looking at odds and hazard ratios, when we adjust for a precision variable, we will get different estimates. The standard error changes in logistic regression. The standard error doesn't change in proportional hazards regression. We will be coming to that the last week or two of the quarter. And question 9. This is an effect modifier. The slopes are different in the two strata. This is rather dramatic effect modification. It's good for one group and bad for the other group. More often, it's just they're different slopes. Effect modifiers are very, very hard to talk about. And they're very, very hard to talk about because it matters very much which is your measure of association. It matters very much whether you're looking at differences or ratios. So if you're analyzing, notice here I had to say the difference of means of continuous data, stratified smooth curves are non-parallel. To do graphical techniques, quite difficult in other settings. Noting that we don't always care about effect modifiers. Sometimes we average across it. In those cases, then we may still want to adjust for any confounding effects. Well, we'll go ahead and do this. Some of you, I've already shown you this in class at different times, but to highlight these differences, if I take a hypothetical agricultural experiment where we're looking at the effect of fertilizer on the size of fruit, I assign plants randomly to receive fertilizer or placebo fertilizer, a sham treatment. It's very important to fool the plants into thinking that they're getting treated. Randomization, in some sense, precludes the possibility of confounding. The response variable is the diameter of the fruit. So the predictor of interest is treatment, sham or fertilizer. It's a binary variable. Hypothetical data, fertilizer versus sham. Fertilizer had an average fruit size of 20.5, but a huge standard deviation, 17.7. The sham had 17.4 for a mean, standard deviation 17.6. And so that difference between the means of 3 is not very large relative to the variability within each group. Okay? And this is what we're getting at. How do I define very large relative to the variability in each group? That's what we're going to call the standard error. And the standard error in this problem would be the standard deviation divided by our sample size. No conclusive evidence that the fertilizer improved size. The difference in the average size, a mean difference of 3.1, was not very large compared to the variability in the size of fruit. The p-value for this test was 0.67. It could give you a confidence interval if you wanted, but it would include 0. And while many people would say, oh, but this is such a small sample size, 12 plants in each group, but a larger sample size might get statistical significance. Well, if we had a large enough sample size, the difference of 3 would eventually be significant. But really, what our p-value is telling us is, with a larger sample size, we might not observe a difference of 3. With a large enough sample size, the difference might be much closer to the truth of 0.
course, we don't know the truth is zero. Well, I do. I know it's not. Because here, I'm going to do an adjusted analysis. I left out a rather important variable, and that was what kind of fruit we were testing. And what we see is if I group them, and do you see the links I will go to be able to say, if we compare apples with apples, we see that whether it's berries, apples, or melons, we always get a difference of 3. But now our standard deviation is much smaller. This is why it's a precision variable. I'm by grouping them together, similar values of the precision variable, I have less variability in each group. And so 3 is now a relatively large difference relative to the standard deviation of around 0.5. And so, sure enough, I have a p-value much less than 10^2 to make it 4. Randomization did protect us from confounding. Each treatment group had exactly 4 plants of each kind. But what would confounding do? So we'll use this exact same sample. Case 1, I had exactly 4 plants of each fruit type in each treatment group. But if I'd use complete randomization, so I just took the 24 plants and I just flipped a coin. And I just did that. The question is, how often would I end up with exactly 4 berries on each treatment, 4 apples on each treatment, and 4 melons on each treatment? And the answer is, I'd have unbalanced groups quite often. It's really quite the rarity that I would have, just by flipping a coin, gotten exactly 4 of each group. Okay, so that tells me that in this next case, where the mean was 17.2 under fertilizer and 20.7 under the sham, for a difference of -3.5, clearly not statistically significant, 0.62, and it's actually in the wrong direction anyway. But what happened is, in this randomized experiment, 5 of my berry plants ended up on the fertilizer and 3 on the sham, whereas 3 melon plants were on fertilizer and 5 were on the sham. This would happen to you all the time. This is not a statistically significant association between the treatment and the type of fruit. This would just happen all the time. You cannot test for confounding. You cannot say there was no statistically significant difference between your chance of being on fertilizer or sham by according to what type of fruit you were. It is not statistically significant. But we got bad confounding, right? But when I do the adjusted analysis, I see that I have a difference remarkably close to 3 each time. This is what happens when you're allowed to make up your data. And that difference in 3, as I take the average of those 3s, I come up with what is the truth. And the truth is the fertilizer increased your fruit diameter by 3 units of some form or another. So we got accuracy. Our p-values tend to -4. I actually lost a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of precision by not doing the stratified randomization. You just can't see it. Yeah, I would have had more precision if I did have 4 in each group. Okay, and then what's effect modification? Well, effect modification, here's my data, a difference of 1.8 between the groups. When I divide it into the groups, we see that the fertilizer has a difference of 3 for berries, a difference of 3 for apples, and a difference of -0.8 for melons. And so now we've got a problem. How do we answer this question? Well, do we say, you know, it isn't one question, it's 3 questions. Does the fertilizer work for berries? Does the fertilizer work for apples? Does the fertilizer work for melons? When you say there's effect modification, that's really what you're saying. And we could try to answer those 3 questions separately. But do you want to allow me, the manufacturer of the fertilizer, the chance to sell my fertilizer when I've also tested it on oranges and grapefruits and pomegranates and, you know, everything else in the world, and that as soon as I find it significant in one of those, I get to sell it? That's the multiple comparison problem. But on the other hand, you know, when you're faced with this and it doesn't seem to work, what should you do? What should you do? What answer do you want to give? Well, yeah, who are you? Are you a berry farmer? Looks good, doesn't it? Are you an apple farmer? Looks good. Are you a melon farmer? Stay away from this. Or do you raise all three of these and you only want to buy one kind of fertilizer, so what should you do? And then, am I even on the right scale? Because how many of you buy apples or berries or melons by their diameter? Or do we really buy it by weight? We'd really want to talk about, gee, the weight you lose for those berries, that concept that you should be taking, you know, 4/3 pi r cubed as the volume rather than just looking at the 2r. So it's a hard question. Effect modification is always hard. So we could give lots of different answers. We could say the treatment effect of 1.8 overall, I average, this will apply exactly to those people who, you know, raise apples and berries and melons in the right proportion. Or we would answer the question in each stratum separately, where I did not adjust for multiple comparison, but actually that negative 0.8 was statistically significant in the wrong direction by itself. Okay, very quickly, the Kaplan-Meier curve, my only point in bringing this up is all those points about parallel curves, those were for scatter plots, not Kaplan-Meier curves. Kaplan-Meier curves will never be parallel. Okay, you have to look at the estimates and the statistics for this. This is clearly an effect modifier because three of those curves overlap and one is different. Noting that it's survival curves, though, you have to decide what aspect you're looking at. Are you looking at the horizontal difference, the area under the curve, the vertical difference, and so on? And then my very last point, none of the above had outliers. Several people on their thing talked about how many standard deviations away from the mean the maximum was. That's a function of sample size. Rebecca?
I'm going to ask you how the spread between the mean and the median is a lot larger than
the median. I can tell you that that's not enough to make much difference in the particular case because all of this is actually normally distributed data.
But looking at these
But it wouldn't be wrong to look at it and worry, but don't go by how many standard deviations it is.